Hello, this is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Yay!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray beat out several candidates with more seasoned political resumes, or at least more attempts at statewide office, to win the state's second highest political office. But Republican Governor Phil Scott has not included the Democratic-like gov in his cabinet or in his COVID-19 press briefings, even when he has had to be absent because of other obligations. So what is the lieutenant governor doing with her time, and does she have a relationship with the governor as the state continues to operate under a state of emergency and the pressure of a pandemic? For the next 10 minutes, we're going to talk with Molly Gray about her first month in office and what she hopes to accomplish moving forward. Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jane, and good afternoon. It's great to be back.
We're glad to have you, and I'd love to hear a little bit about what you've been doing in your first month in office. It is, you know, of course, a strange year since people aren't in the state house, legislators or lobbyists or the public. You know, it's a very different year and difficult in some ways to see people who work in government other than through the governor's biweekly press briefings. The lieutenant governor's job is one that includes a few official duties and a lot of opportunity to create a job based on your own priorities. Are your days full, or are you kind of scrambling to find things to do at this point?
My days are pretty full, and I will say I'm traveling down to Montpelier every day, going into the state house and presiding over a virtual meeting of senators Tuesday through Friday. It's a bit lonely in the building. You know, there's no playbook for a digital democracy, but which is what we're sort of operating in now. But first and foremost, my priorities have been doing my job, the job that Vermonters elected me to do, which is to preside over the Senate, get the committees assigned. We have a lot of boards and commissions that also need new assignments, making sure that 79 bills that the Senate's already introduced are going to the right committees. And then most importantly, which is what I think you alluded to, meeting with the governor and his team, not only over the last month, but just after getting elected, to make sure that I am fully briefed and up to speed on COVID recovery, vaccines, unemployment insurance, you name it. I've met with the commissioner and secretary to be fully briefed.
So when you've been meeting with the commissioners, the secretaries, when you're talking about what the state's response to COVID-19 is that on your own initiative, or are you working through the governor and his cabinet to do that?
Oh, of course, working through the governor and his cabinet. And they've been incredibly thoughtful, helpful to support those meetings. Also meeting with the governor, we met last week. We'll meet again in 2 weeks and are setting up a regular cadence to keep lines of communication open. I should say it was, I think, January 6th, as we all recall, when the insurrection happened. It was the day before my swearing in, but the immediate outreach to ensure that my swearing in could go on safely, that there was security measures taken at the state house, making sure that there's just good contact. I think the governor and I both share the belief that we're, you know, Vermonters first and foremost. We don't agree on everything. Of course, he's a Republican and I'm a Democrat, but putting the recovery of the state, putting communities, businesses, and the future at the forefront, putting people before politics. And I'll just end with this. You know, a lot of people have asked this question. A lot of journalists, frankly. And Jane, I appreciate the question, but I think this is a moment where there's
which,
a lot of
which
division.
Question in particular?
The question about how we're working together. And of course, we are working together well. We've taken every
step. Well, I don't think it's an
of
course.
To do
I mean, we heard in the previous campaign with the previous lieutenant governor that he was shut out from pretty much all communications. And in fact, I got a note from Mike in Moncton, who sent me an email a few weeks ago wondering, you know, where is Molly Gray in this response? And he said, fast forward to today, where we have a new lieutenant governor, Molly Gray, who so far has been invisible in the response. I don't get to watch all the twice weekly press briefings, but I do not believe she's attended any. We also have Phil Scott quarantining at the time that Mike wrote in because of potential exposure to COVID. So do Scott and Gray meet to discuss the response, or like previous Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman, is she not involved? I don't think it's necessarily an obvious that you two would have a close relationship.
Yeah, I understand that. I think what's most important for you to know and for Vermonters to know is that we're meeting regularly. And the governor has an incredibly talented team, Commissioner Levine, Commissioner, now I believe Secretary, soon to be Secretary, potentially Sherling. And there's regular contact with them. There's regular contact with the governor. And we're doing everything we can to make sure there's continuity of government. Heaven forbid that should happen, making sure that there's a coordinated response effort. But I also have to do the job that Vermonters elected me to do, which is to preside over the Senate and chart the course that I focus on a lot over the last year, which is bringing the voices of Vermonters into the State House, focusing on broadband and childcare and a lot of the issues that are going to help us recover stronger as we move forward.
And why do you think, why do you bristle at the question about your relationship with the governor, given what we heard in the previous relationship between the previous lieutenant governor and the governor? Why do you think that that's either not a legitimate question or a question that, you know, it's sort of tired or you just wish people would get beyond?
I don't think it's a bristling by any means. It's more of there's so much work that's happening. And I'd like to be able to talk about that, talk about the seat at the table initiative that my office just launched last week, where we brought in AARP and the Vermont Chamber of Commerce, VPIRG, also the Vermont Medical Society, to talk about the incredible need that we have in the state right now when it comes to accessing online learning and remote work and telehealth. Just last week, we also launched Lieutenant Governor for a Day, which is a really important initiative, I think, to keep young Vermonters, you know, our next generation of leaders, connected to the State House and to give them an access and an understanding of what's happening within the building at a time where, you know, after January 6th and after the insurrection, I think it was certainly a wake up call for me, and I think a wake up call for a lot of folks about, you know, where are we as a country, as a state, in ensuring that Vermonters feel connected to and that government, you know, represents them, and that it's extremely essential.
Let's talk a little bit more about those issues, and particularly the sort of listening sessions and panels that you're convening, as you just mentioned. You know, when you were campaigning, your priorities included increasing affordable and high quality child care, working on access to mental health care, dealing with the climate crisis. And you talked a lot about working on universal broadband. You know, as I mentioned, the role of the lieutenant governor is challenging in many ways because there are so few sort of policy abilities that you have. You can't create policy. You can't create legislation. And so, you know, often the job of a lieutenant governor includes a lot of things like listening sessions or like something like lieutenant governor for a day. So how do you then take that and move it toward actually getting momentum to work on the issues that you raised as priorities in your campaign?
Absolutely. And that's always the question, right? The lieutenant governor sometimes is not necessarily part of the executive, but not necessarily part of the legislative branch. What we're doing as part of Seat at the Table, for example, is convening legislators who are focused on broadband issues, but may not necessarily be on committees of jurisdiction, bringing in groups that are in our communities working, who are dealing with the daily struggles of not being able to access, and then sharing those experiences, sharing the recommendations for how we move forward, and then drafting that up into, say, a memo, which we'll release shortly, so that policymakers, the administration, just have another set of eyes, another set of ears out in the state, understanding what's going on. So I think it's a really great effort to be able to keep Vermonters who don't necessarily always feel connected to Montpelier feeling connected. And if I can just say this, Jane, over the last 2 weeks, I've attended different advocacy days, virtual advocacy days, and there have been over 200 people on some calls, people who, you know, I'm trying to imagine how you'd access the State House if you had 200 people, you know, that's a lot, but somehow we're moving into a space where I think more and more people are accessing government despite COVID. And that's a really exciting development.
In Governor Phil Scott's budget address, he specifically mentioned additional funding for early childhood education and for expanding universal broadband access. Now, some people think there wasn't enough money included for that. What's your perspective?
$20 million, I believe that was a number, $18 to $20 million isn't enough. We knew before the most recent omnibus funding package federally that $100 million was really the number that Vermont needed and a lot of small states needed. But
you mean for universal broadband or for child care?
For universal broadband, excuse me. And I think what's changed since sort of before December or, you know, and now is that we have Senator Leahy as the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, Senator Sanders as the chairman of the Budget Committee. And I think this is, frankly, Vermont's moment to be a laboratory for rural America on how to get childcare right, how to get broadband right, perhaps also how to do paid family and medical leave with federal support and to recover stronger. So there's no way that $20 million is going to be enough. I think it's a good effort by the governor. I know that there's legislation that's been introduced on broadband, but it's going to take a lot of federal support. And Vermont's well positioned to receive that support, as are small states around the country.
So what else are you working on that you think needs more traction? Because, you know, as I mentioned, it is hard in some ways to gain traction generally for a lieutenant governor, but specifically in a year like this, where there is so much attention, rightly so, being paid to the response to the pandemic. And, you know, there's a lot of visibility through the press conferences on Tuesday and Fridays, but you haven't attended any of those. Are there things that you think need to gain more traction that people should be aware of that you're doing?
Yeah, I think the big question that I would like to tackle is, what does a recover stronger or a build back better plan look like for the state? The governor every day with Commissioner Levine is talking about the response numbers, but we at some point need to think beyond this pandemic. And there are a lot of lessons learned. Our restaurants helping to address the needs of food insecure Vermonters, our community co-working spaces setting up broadband or leaving broadband, accessible, Wi-Fi accessible for some communities. There's the childcare needs, which, you mentioned previously. I think 73% of unemployment claims or losses over the last month or so were losses by women who have had to leave the workforce. So much of what we knew before this pandemic, we know for sure now. And I think we need to capture those stories. The Lieutenant Governor's office, my office, is well placed to do that. We're doing it through Seat at the Table. I'll do it through listening tours over the next couple of months and put forward thoughtful measures to think about what the future of the state looks like, working with our congressional delegation in particular.
I want to ask you about one other issue before we let you go. As Kit Norton reported in Vermont Digger at the end of last week, the Government Operations Committee is no longer discussing Senator Acacia Rahm's suggestion to make residency requirements more stringent for those running for political office in Vermont. I mean, as you know, and as was discussed in the campaign, the state constitution requires 2 years of residency for people running for legislative seats and 4 years for those running for governor or lieutenant governor. And Senator Rahm had proposed a requirement that a candidate must show they voted in Vermont in every state or general election in those last several years that they're claiming residency for. This caused a little bit of a stir last week. It was reported in Dave Graham's Fair Game column in 7 Days. And the suggestion in that column was that it was a shot across the bow at you. When asked about that, Senator Rahm accused reporters of pitting women against women. But I'm curious about your take on that and if you think there should be clarification on what the residency requirements require.
I think this is a time, again, if I can go back to what we experienced over the last 4 years and the insurrection that occurred on January 6th, we need as many voices in government as possible. We need those who maybe don't believe government represents them to feel connected to the essentialness of government, to the promise of government. I think, and this is part of why we launched Lieutenant Governor for a Day, to try to get young Vermonters, young leaders to feel connected to civic engagement, feel connected to government at the local level. I strongly believe that, I trust Vermont voters. I trust Vermont voters to vet candidates to, and we do that here in the state. We have a strong tradition of that. I think this is a time where we need to encourage as much participation as possible, whether you're a new Vermonter or you've been here for, you know, four or five, six generations or years, you know, rather. But this is a time to encourage the next generation to run for office, to get engaged. And I certainly plan to be part of that.
And so do you think having a voting requirement would maybe just make people not want to run as much or not be eligible to run when they've decided they want to be engaged in state politics?
I think we need to be very careful about the limitations we put in place. We have an incredible new Vermonter community in the state and some individuals who may be here as legal permanent residents, which means that they may not have the ability to vote. And I would hate for some rule to be put in place that maybe takes the state in a direction it's not intending to go. And I don't want to suggest that that's where Senator Rahm was going or what that the intention was. Frankly, I don't know, but I don't think that that's I don't think that represents Vermont values and what we need to do right now to welcome more participation.
Molly Gray is Vermont's Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governor Gray, thank you very much for speaking with us today. We look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you, Jane. Great to be on.